A special thank you to everyone who is tuning in to Lullaby the Fear podcast. If this is your first time and you love the show, then please leave a 5-star rating wherever you listen to podcasts to become a true Fear Cult ambassador. It supports the show for free and motivates me to research deeper cases. Sweet dreams.
It has been established that persons who have recently died have been returning to life and committing acts of murder.
Believe in ghosts?
First simply disappeared, the other two died.
Hello, hello, my pretties. It's your non-destructive cult leader and presenter of crime, Ashley Lana. How is everyone doing tonight? Now, I'm saying tonight because I record at night. So if it's day for you, how is everyone doing today? Welcome to season 3, my fear cult. Look how far we've come so fast. It's absolute insanity. And this season, I have cases that I plan to dissect on a level that will make you question reality. And even maybe those around you. Because fear comes in many shapes and every form. So with that being said, welcome to Lullaby. In the season 2 two-part finale, we hit on the childhood and crimes of the Night Stalker, Richard Ramirez. And I went heavy into the detail regarding the life of his parents, his siblings, and his birth, all the way to the day he died. And they were really intense episodes with amazing reenactments. Again, shout out to Steve and Megan from For the Booze podcast and Jericho from the As the Fellas podcast for giving it their fucking all with those reenactments. If you haven't heard them, go back, close your eyes, take a drink of your pumpkin spice latte. I don't know, it's the season. And just immerse yourself in those dramatizations. We are now back with season 3 after a little bit of a break between season 2, and this week we are going to examine a case that will make you tell the first person you see afterwards, "I have to fucking tell you something, this is the craziest thing I've ever fucking heard," on Lullaby to date. We'll say to date. But I first heard of this case years ago, and there are multiple similar cases, but this specific case even inspired a famous horror movie. And I'm not going to tell you anything more because I don't want to give it away. And my sources for this episode include many publications from the Czech Republic, which translating took half of my existence this month. It was such a gong show. And a book by author Ryan Green titled The Curum Case, a terrifying true story of child abuse, cults, and cannibalism. This story is true, it's bizarre, and absolutely terrifying. But this is Lullaby, so if you're a returning listener, you should know this by now. But if not, and you're new, then welcome, and get comfortable, because sweet dreams are made of these. The following story contains subject matter involving graphic descriptions of crimes against children, sexual and mental abuse, and cannibalism. Please take into consideration that some topics may be disturbing for some listeners. Listener discretion is advised. At any moment, he was going to be a new father. The man's excitement resembled that of a child staring at the presents under a tree at Christmas time. This was not Christmas. This was even better in his eyes. Very soon, he was going to be rocking his newborn child to sleep in the nursery that he had just built.
All right, crib. Check. Diaper station. Check. Nightlight, check. Definitely missing something. What the hell am I missing?
Standing in place with one hand on his hip and the other scratching his head, he glanced around. His eyes fell upon a box of the brand new baby monitor he had just purchased.
Ooh, fancy. As much as I love new gadgets, these instructions would be absolute death of me. Where the hell am I supposed to put this?
As he began unpacking the electronics, he felt his nerves start to grow with anticipation of fatherhood. He positioned the screen on the dresser and began fiddling with the dials.
See, I did that, but why are you not working? God damn it. Oh, yep. Turning it on for starters will probably help.
As the monitor began to receive the signal, a monochromatic image appeared on the screen. The man leaned in closer in confusion, for the relayed video was not of his own house, but someone else's.
What in God's name am I looking at? That is not my house. That better not be my house.
On the screen was a small blonde boy, not much older than 6 years old. The child was naked, with his arms tied behind his back. He seemed to be amusing himself with something on the floor.
Okay, it's time to get this image off my screen before the police arrive. I don't know, what is this? Oh my God. This kid is probably playing in a very strange way. I have to go see my wife.
He turned off the feed and drove to the hospital to visit his wife. Hours had passed and he arrived home 6 hours later. Curiosity at its peak, the man revisited the baby monitor and turned it on. This time, the feeling in his stomach was not the same. Before, it was of confusion, and this time it was gut-wrenching. The small child was still alone in the closet. Something didn't feel right. Pressing record on the video, he then picked up the phone and called the police.
911, what's your emergency?
This is Edward Turdy. I'm staring at a bizarre feed coming through on my new baby monitor. The feed is not from my house. It's got to be from a nearby signal. It is a child in an enclosed small space, like a closet. His arms are tied behind his back and he is naked. Yeah. Over 6 hours at least. I mean, I just started hooking up the monitor and I was shocked, as you could tell, to see this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if it's an emergency, but it's not normal for a child to be alone eating off the floor in a dark closet. If you could send the police over, that would allow me to feel better about this entire situation. Thank you. I'll be right here.
As Edward hung up the phone, he looked at the image on the screen. He reached out and touched the boy's face.
It's gonna be okay, little man. You're gonna be fine.
As if the child had heard him, his innocent eyes looked directly at the camera, as if begging for help. This is the malevolent true story of Barbora Sklarova and the Kurem cult. Klára Marová was born in 1978 in Czechoslovakia. She was the youngest of three girls born to Ladislav and Eliška Marová. Klára and her older sisters, Katerina and Gabriela, were best friends who enjoyed playing together in the summer sun and laughing together in their bedrooms throughout the night. The Marová family were raised devout Catholics, who were very happy and had no issues. The three girls were polite, well-mannered, and valued healthy morals towards each other. Of the sisters, Klára was considered to be the athletic one. She participated in volleyball, synchronized swimming, and gymnastics. Gabriela and Catalina were more interested in their studies rather than sports. In 1996, when Klára was 18 years old, she became pregnant. It was unexpected, but welcome between Klára and her boyfriend, Radek Zufal. The couple married not long after the announcement, and in October of 1997, they welcomed a son, who they named Jakub. Together, the three lived in happiness at Klára's parents' home to financially help until the small family was ready to break away on their own. Finally, after a year, they were able to move out. Klára, her husband, and child moved out of her parents' home to rent out an apartment. 2 years later, Klára had her second child, another boy, who they named Andre. Clara decided to go to university to achieve a degree in economics. Soon after, she began her career as a secretary. Everything seemed wonderful for the young family until 2003. Clara and her husband began getting into loud arguments that many neighbors remember vividly. And near the end of 2003, Clara separated from her husband and he moved out, leaving her and his two young children. Despite the divorce, Clara and Radek became friends due to their separation being triggered by relationship differences. Radek gave custody to Clara because of her diligence as a mother. He saw them whenever he could, and there was no issues. In 2004, Clara started studying social child care and education. Clara's older sister, Katerina, had taken the same program in university in Brno, Czech Republic. At the same time, Katerina had been working as a caregiver aide for a 12-year-old mentally disabled child named Annika. Annika was abandoned by her biological parents in the late 90s. Her parents suffered from both drug and alcohol addictions. Together, the parents decided it was best to give their daughter up, for they could not take care of her. Annika was diagnosed with autism, violent seizures, leukemia, and hydrocephalus. Annika had suffered post-traumatic stress disorder from her previous home, and her disabilities required her to be tended to at almost every waking hour. She had to be carried up and down stairs and fed personally. Katerina had been working closely with Annika's doctor, who had prescribed daily massages and medications to decrease the pain the child had to live with. Overall, the sickly Annika had lived a hard life, and Katerina only wanted the best for her. In 2005, Katerina had introduced Annika to her younger sister, Clara. Annika immediately grew an attachment to Clara. Normally, Annika would have a temper, and she became violent whenever someone who wasn't Katerina or her doctor would approach her. Katerina had expressed Annika's horrific past to her sister and said that since the young girl was happy around her, she should consider adopting the 12-year-old girl. Clara had been living in Brno with her two sons, Jakob and Andre, in their apartment. Being a single mother of two children under the age of 10 was already a challenge. However, since she was a teenager, Clara always told everyone that she was destined for greater things and wanted to give back to those in need, another reason why she was in university for childcare and education. The bond she had developed with Annika was special, and everyone noticed it. It was detailed in Annika's papers that she was abused prior to being abandoned. Her life had been full of pain due to her illnesses, and she was not going to live a long life. She was not expected to live past the age of 16. Clara made up her mind to give the poor child every opportunity for what time Annika had left. To ease any anxiety, Katerina told Clara that she would not be raising her alone, and that she would have help from Annika's doctor and herself, and assistance would always be provided. Katerina informed Clara of the intricate adoption process in Czechoslovakia, and because Annika was abandoned with such a horrific social past, she had not been put into the foster care system for her safety. The doctor had been secretly protecting the child from entering the foster care system and being discovered by her abusers, who were still trying to get her back. Annika had not only been abused by her parents, but by an unnamed organization that Katerina could not name. Katerina was told this information in secrecy by Annika's doctor. Clara promised that she would protect Annika at all costs and would do anything to successfully adopt her. Annika's doctor called Clara and detailed the horrific past of the child in depth, which left Clara mortified. The 12-year-old girl was living in fear of being kidnapped again by a secret organization of children traffickers based out of Norway. The doctor informed Clara that he had met her sister Katerina at the daycare center, and she agreed to secretly take in Annika to hide her from the traffickers who were still searching for her. It all made sense now to Clara. Annika's doctor expressed the adoption process was going to be difficult since Annika was not in the system, and the adoption protocol required DNA testing, social worker examinations, court appearances, and a sworn oath in person to be taken place. Annika's doctor informed Clara that she need not worry about any of that, and in the end, he would protect Annika's life no matter what. In December of 2005, Annika had officially moved in with Clara and her two sons. Clara's sons, 8-year-old Andre and 10-year-old Jakob, grew a close relationship with Annika sometime after. The three children would play, laugh, and draw together. The boys were gentle with her due to her depleting physical health. The boys always made Annika feel like she was part of the family. Annika was very cautious of anyone new that she would see, terrified of the scary people who would possibly take her away and harm her again. Clara soon began feeling the pressure of having to raise three children. Friends and family recalled watching the progression of stress take its toll on the single mother. Annika would demand the attention of Clara, always wanting snacks and to be played with. The spotlight shift had caused her two young sons to act up to get more attention, such as arguing and fighting with each other. Annika would suffer violent seizures that required her to be restrained to prevent her from hurting herself. Clara would sit with her and comfort her, making sure that she was all right. At this point, Clara was getting roughly 3 hours of sleep a night. It was difficult for the 27-year-old mother, and in 2006, Clara dropped out of university and moved to Curum. Clara confided in her sister Katerina that she needed help. Everything was too much. Taking care of Annika and dealing with her temper tantrums when she did not get her way was overwhelming. Plus, her sons Jakob and Andre just added to the stress. Katerina told Clara that she would speak to Annika's doctor and he would know what to do. When it came to the stress of her two sons, the doctor informed Clara that she needed to start disciplining Andre and Jakob before they became teenagers and even more rebellious. Don't be afraid to hit them or lock them in their rooms when they misbehaved, he told her. Then in the case of dealing with Annika, he insisted that she was acting out due to her immense pain of her illnesses. And he told Clara that what she should do was massage Annika's neck down to her lumbar spine for up to 8 hours a day. Clara was also instructed by the doctor to massage Annika's genitalia for hours to help them create a stronger bond as mother and daughter. I figured I'd let the concept of those instructions just sink in for a little bit. Little bit. At this point in the story, I hope many of you have caught the suspicious patterns involving this Doctor of Annika's. He does not have a name, and he will not have a name for the rest of the story. And it's important to note that Clara had never met this doctor. She did say in court that she spoke to him on the phone, and in one rare occasion, she met him in a car located in a secret dark location where she couldn't see his face. Awfully suspicious, I might say. But otherwise, they only communicated through text messages. It's very suspicious. This doctor is constantly operating in the background of this entire story, and we will soon enter our favorite subcategory of true crime at the Fear Cult, cults. Because here at Lullaby, we love cults. We don't support people being murdered, we just love the dark psychology. And this secret doctor has been contacting Clara and Katerina Marova, and he has saved... See, this is where it's weird, is he has saved Annika from human trafficking in Norway, but he's clearly hiding something else. And the children are increasingly getting more aggressive and irritated towards each other and Clara. And this is due to young children constantly seeking the attention of their mother, which is not necessarily uncommon. According to Michigan State University, children act out usually as a method of indirect communication, and in an article titled MSU Early Childhood Development Goals of Misbehavior, written by Kylie Ramanowicz. I probably butchered that name and I highly apologize. She says, quote, "While children would prefer positive attention over negative attention, they will accept and seek out negative attention if that's all that is offered to them. If the only time an adult pays attention to their child is by yelling or scolding in reaction to negative behaviors, the child is likely to repeat or escalate their actions to continue getting the attention. If we find a way that gives the child our attention in a positive, constructive way, everyone can get what they want." End quote. And as we see, Clara does not respond as an understanding parent would. She sought the advice from the wrong person, this secret doctor, but she trusted him because he was helping Annika. As the story goes on, this case is so much deeper than it appears on the surface. Now pay attention to the details from here on out because they are so important, and I don't want you to get lost. I have done my best to explain the schematics of this case because it's so complicated. So let's continue. Clara began detaching from her immediate family except for her sister Katerina, the only person who knew of Annika's secret. When Clara's parents and sister Gabriella began questioning why they couldn't see Jakob and Andre, they were told that the son's behavioral problems were an increasing concern. Their father, Radek, was told that his sons were taking part of a nature project that required the boys to spend time in the forest to study animals in their natural habitat. The Morova family believed it was in the best interest of their grandchildren, so they sadly accepted the visitation change. Katerina moved in with her sister Clara, and the family of five settled into their new home in Kyrum, segregated from their old life. In the summer of 2006, Clara's behavior towards her children derailed. The sudden psychological brutality towards her sons was so drastic that the boys went into shock. According to Clara, her sons Jakob and Andre's misbehaving had reached the point that resulted in her punishing them severely. Annika recalled her new brothers threatening to harm each other and their mother if anyone stood in their way. This was the overall rationalization for Clara's dynamic shift. The doctor advised that Clara needed to take her children to a secluded cabin in the woods, 30 minutes away from the city, to teach them a lesson. The vehicle pulled into a long tree-covered driveway that seemed desolate at best. The three children gazed out of the car windows, curious of their new surroundings. When the engine stopped, Clara and Katerina corralled the children out and introduced them to two men with the same name, Jan Turek and Jan Skirla. There was also a woman named Hanna Basova. All had been friends of Katerina, whom they've all met through Annika's secret doctor. Immediately upon entering the cabin, Clara's two sons, Jakob and Andre, were shoved into dog cages, with loud, mechanical, transgressive music blasting at them for hours. The adults would scream and taunt the children as the psychological abuse was used to deprive their dignity. It was meant as an attitude adjustment. The week-long trip apparently intended to abuse the children into submission. The two boys were fed from dog bowls and never let out of the cages unless to be subjected to the following. Warning: the following may contain trigger warnings for listeners. 10-year-old Jakob and 8-year-old Andre were brought into the wilderness and handed shovels. They were then told to dig until their bodies could fit into the hole completely. Once they were finished and terrified, they were then instructed to lay down inside of them and say out loud that they were dead. By instilling the fear of death was the insinuated way to make the children scared of dying due to their bad behavior. Between the four adults, the two boys were ripped out of their small cages to have bags tied over their heads. Next, they were brutally beaten with rods and lashed with belt buckles until they could no longer take it. Burning cigarettes were put out on their pubic regions that caused permanent scarring. Later, Jakob recalled that his mother Clara never smoked and specifically bought the cigarettes with the purpose to hurt him. The boys were then held down to have scorching hot water slowly poured onto their naked bodies. If that was not horrendous enough, the mother Clara and Aunt Katerina allowed the boys to be waterboarded, the act of torture to instill the fear of drowning in a person by lying them inclined on their back and pouring water into their nose and mouths as a forced drowning. They also dunked 8-year-old Andre's head into a vat of water. Forks were then used to cut into their bodies. Andre, the youngest of the two, was held down as his mother Clara cut into his buttocks with a fork and knife and then removed a chunk of flesh. She then ate a part in front of her sons and then passed the fork around to the group for everyone to eat while her child lay screaming. After the week of horror at the cabin, Clara, Katerina, Annika, Jakob, and Andre returned to their home in Kyrum. Clara and Katerina drilled the appropriate speeches into the two boys' heads of what to say if anyone had questions. The women had no intention of ending the abuse that occurred at the cabin. Jakob did go back to school and was never permitted to attend any form of event that involved him being in swimming shorts that revealed the scars and bruises on his body. According to his teachers, his demeanor did change, but he became reclusive and shy. It wasn't enough to cause a major concern, most likely due to his mother and aunt constantly reminding him to never tell a soul, or he would be hurt even more. According to ChildSafeHouse.org, children will often not tell anyone of their abuse due to feeling a sense of guilt and lack of confidence of being believed by an adult. Some tend to deny the acts as a way to repress the pain. In many cases, the signs of abuse are hidden so well that they are not obvious until the child progresses into adulthood. Andre was homeschooled due to a fabricated lie by his mother that he had a hearing impairment. The classes were instructed by fellow abuser Hanna Basova, the woman who joined the two men at the weekend cabin retreat. Hanna was a social worker and former co-worker of Katerina at the Light Beam Child Daycare. Hanna would force him to urinate in a bucket and would beat him whenever she felt the need or was upset. No one seen poor Andre in the basement chained to the small desk in the corner. The only other person besides Katerina to see him at the daycare was the other male cabin abuser, Jan Turek. This small group managed to hide everything from innocent onlookers, but no one had any clue as to the ritualistic abuse that was occurring behind the smoke and mirrors. When Andre wasn't chained to a desk under the watch of Jan Turek and Hanna Basova, he was locked up in a compact space under the staircase at home. Meanwhile, his mother Clara and Aunt Katerina spent all their time playing and catering to Annika. She would still throw tantrums and require toys and food. The doctor was constantly making sure that his little Annika was being cared for by Clara. The doctor was the only person to be contacted if Annika needed any form of medical attention, so that he could remotely set up arrangements for her to be secretly treated. It was in May of 2007 when Kurm resident Edward Turdy began setting up his baby monitor for the arrival of his newborn child. Once the video monitor began picking up a foreign signal nearby, it caught the image of a small naked boy lying on the floor tied up in a windowless room. Edward was initially confused as to what was being presented on his screen. It wasn't his house. It made sense that his device picked up a signal from a similar device in a two-house radius. In interviews, Edward explained that he first rationalized the bizarre situation as just a child playing on his own in a strange way. Since his wife was in the hospital with child, he wasted no time making his way over. Around 6 hours later, he arrived back home. His curiosity had caused him to check the monitor again. And after all that time at the hospital, when he came home, the child had not left the position on the floor. This concerned him greatly, and he contacted the authorities. Officer Miroslav Gregor and his partner arrived at Edward's home to investigate the strange report. Edward led them into the room with the baby monitor, and the officers recognized the shocking footage. It definitely wasn't normal. Officer Gregor explained how the signal had to be coming from a neighborhood house. He and his partner then went door to door, inquiring if a young boy was living in any of the residents. None of them housed the boy described. The officers then walked up the steps of the home of Clara Morova. When she answered, she offered them confusion and told them that no male children lived in the house with her. She only had her 13-year-old daughter, Annika. The officers accepted her story and took their leave. Officer Miroslav and company walked back to Edward Turdy's house, and without hesitation, Edward told them that he heard the entire conversation with Clara through his recording baby monitor, indicating that the boy was in fact inside of the house. The investigative officers then retraced their steps back to the home of Clara Morova. When Officer Miroslav told her that her house was now an active crime scene, she nervously let them in. Clara warned the officers that her mentally ill daughter would not be welcome to their presence and would throw an aggressive fit when she seen them. Officer Miroslav acknowledged the statement, but informed her of the severity of the crime at hand. As he was explaining the details, his eyes fell upon a padlocked door under the staircase. At the same time, Annika had begun screaming at the top of her lungs from upstairs in an overwhelming expression of stress. The officers asked Clara if she could unlock the door for them. She told them that the door had been locked since she and Annika had moved in, and she herself had never opened it. The refusal resulted in Officer Miroslav calling the fire department to break down the door. Katerina had arrived and began defending her sister Clara. Upon hearing her mother and aunt arguing with the police, Annika crawled down the stairs on her hands and knees and sat in front of the locked door. Then, Clara and Katerina followed suit, refusing to move. The police carefully removed the screaming Annika from the door, and they restrained Clara and Katerina. The officers and firefighters recalled the situation. Clara and Katerina did physically fight to stay in front of the door, but it wasn't a fight for the officers. Annika, who was clearly mentally challenged, was screaming incoherently at the officers trying to remove the child. Once the firemen cut the lock from the staircase door, they found 8-year-old Andre, with his hands tied behind his back, laying on the floor, surrounded by 6 months' worth of feces, urine, and vomit. The dehydrated child had been malnourished for months. Clara admitted that the child on the floor was her son. She then told police that the situation was more complex and larger than they knew. Unimpressed by Clara's attitude, the officers arrested her and her sister Katharina, while taking 10-year-old Jakob and 13-year-old Annika into protective child care. To make the situation even more heartbreaking, the officers had to take a photo of the crime scene before they could touch anything. As the officer raised his camera to take a picture of 8-year-old Andre, he looked up at him and smiled for the camera, as if he had done this multiple times before. Andre was immediately rushed to the hospital. He told the doctors that all of his scars were caused from him playing outside, and that the marks around his genitalia were from wasp bites from camping. He showed signs of healed lacerations and an indentation on his buttocks. He also had cuts running down his arms and legs, and suspicious deliberate injuries. Andre had rehearsed the explanation for everything. The medical professionals knew that this was not the true story. The boy was only frightened to talk. Andre was psychologically evaluated and showed signs of trauma, but was abnormally calm due to the scenario. In the book, The Kerem Case by Ryan Green, it is explained that once night had fallen, Andre changed. He started hearing voices, believing that the photographs on the walls were ghosts. The poor child would scream, "Just kill me." The nurses were horrified hearing the words coming out of an 8-year-old boy's mouth. 10-year-old Jakob was also taken to be medically examined. The nurses noted that he bore similar scars and injuries to that of his brother. Neither child had anything negative to reveal about their home life, until Jakob felt that he was safe. He informed the doctors that the injuries were caused by the abuse he received from his mother Clara and his aunt Katharina. Both Jakob and Andre began divulging the crimes of their confinement. They mentioned how Clara and Katharina invited Hanna Basova to watch over them when they could not. Hanna Basova was the woman who chained Andre to the desk in the basement of the daycare center. Hanna also told police that the allegations was from a confused child who didn't understand that he was in a timeout room at the daycare. Jakob and Andre bravely explained to police that besides the abuse from Hanna Basova, two other men were also involved, Jan Turek and Jan Skrla, both normal in appearance and roughly in their mid-30s. Both men had worked at the Light Beam Daycare Center with Katharina and Hanna Basova. The boys were questioned about their relationships, and when they were asked about Annika, they were over the moon about her. They honestly told the investigators that she was their best friend, and they loved her very much. She did require lots of attention, but that was because of her illnesses. It wasn't her fault. Annika was then questioned about the situation. However, due to her mental disabilities, it proved very complicated. She would not speak in full sentences and would hysterically cry for her mother, Clara. She would not let anyone touch her, so the nurses waited to examine her body the next day in case she had been abused as well. The investigators did not realize how much Annika was being protected by Clara and Katharina from her past life and those who were out to get her. On May 12, 2007, when the nurses went to care for Annika, they found her room empty and the window left open. Annika was gone. The police were called and began searching the surrounding forest for the child. She was not able to care for herself, and unless people had her medication, she certainly would not be all right. After days of searching, Annika Morova was gone. Authorities were now on the search for the organization that had abducted poor 13-year-old Annika, those who Clara and her sister Katharina were protecting her from. In the late fall of 2007, while the police were still searching for Annika, almost 1,000 miles away from Kerem, a similar case had occurred. Martin Farner was a theater manager who worked at the Nordic Black Theater. He had just moved to Norway with his wife and 13-year-old son Adam. The young child was enrolled in an Oslo school where his father had hoped that he could learn Norwegian. Adam was shy, but he was described by his teachers as skittish and suffered post-traumatic stress disorder, but very intelligent. Adam confided in his teachers that he was scared because of his father, who was sexually abusing him. He said that his father was renting him out to men in a secret organization to perform sexual favors for money. Adam's confession to the atrocities resulted in his teachers referring the boy to a psychiatrist to tell if he was lying. It took some time, much like Jakob and Andre, but soon Adam was retelling his abuse. During one session, Adam was left alone, and he drew a picture on a piece of paper. This image made psychiatrists call the police immediately. The boy was not lying. The police studied the paper, and it was of seven children covered in blood being screamed at by an adult that resembled Adam's father. The father was arrested, and Adam was sent to an orphanage where he would be safe from his abusers. It was on December 16th, and Adam had been on a field trip with other children from the orphanage when an unknown vehicle pulled up next to Adam and had gotten him into the vehicle and taken him away. The supervisors told police that they suspected that he was abducted by a human trafficking organization that his father was a part of. An emergency alert signaled across the country, searching for 13-year-old Adam Farner. On December 19th, at the Neptune Hotel in Norway, Adam was seen holding onto the hand of an older man. Witnesses stated that the relationship seemed peaceful, the only oddity being that the child seemed too old to be holding the man's hand in such a way. The boy was bald and had dark circles under his eyes, indicated the amount of exhaustion he was under. The man approached the front desk and asked to use the telephone with a thick Russian accent. The receptionist, a woman named Natalia Stormark, thought it was a bit strange since she had seen them previously with a cell phone. Natalia had not been one for staying up to date on the local news, so she had no idea about the missing teenage boy, especially that he was standing right in front of her, the missing Adam Farner. The phone request raised flags in Natalia's mind. She thought that the man may have been attempting to do something illegal, such as steal the expensive paintings in the hotel. Acting casually, she allowed the man to use the phone, but when they left, Natalia immediately called the police, describing the two civilians. The police questioned her about the whereabouts of the man and the teen, and she said that she did not know, but only described their appearance. Authorities recognized the description of the man to be that of Mikhail Riha. Adam's family had immigrated to Norway with Mikhail, a friend of the family. Investigators traced the last whereabouts of the man to discover that he had previously rented a vehicle, one that matched the description of taking Adam prior. Officers were on the lookout for the car and sent warnings to every car rental dealership in the area, since he would probably bring the car back. And Mikhail did. On January 5th, 2008, Mikhail Riha and 13-year-old Adam Farner were found in Tromsø, Norway. Mikhail had been returning the rental vehicle to the dealership, and the police raided the building and arrested him for the abduction of 13-year-old Adam Farner. While in custody, the police questioned Adam concerning his abduction, but soon realized that 13-year-old Adam was not who he was disguised to be. Adam was also 13-year-old Annika Morova, the mentally disabled child from Kyrum. The Norwegian police contacted the Czechoslovakian authorities, who had been on the countrywide search for the missing Annika. The child abuse case in Kyrum was not yet sent to trial due to not having enough evidence, missing their key witness who was abducted, Annika Morova. Not only was Annika slash Adam found, but a deeper secret was uncovered. Annika slash Adam was not even a 13-year-old child, but a 33-year-old woman named Barbora Sklarova. Doesn't this sound familiar, Fear Cult? It sounds like a familiar horror movie because it is. It's the case that inspired The Orphan. The police discovered that 5'2", 33-year-old Barbora Sklarova had been impersonating children for years and had an outstanding arrest warrant for arrest and fraud. Now stay with me, Fear Cult. I need you to get your pen and papers out, because explaining this is going to be a tour de France, and I'm going to summarize it very quickly. Barbora Sklarova was born in 1975 with a glandular disease that gave her a youthful appearance, and she was one of two children to the loving parents Ramada and Josef Skrla, who were not drug addicts or alcoholics. Barbora's brother was named Jan Skrla. the man who Katerina coincidentally met and brought to the cabin that weekend, who worked with her at the daycare center. Oh, how we have come full circle. Now, Barbora Sklarova struggled to perform many basic human activities, but not to the extent of how much she milked it with Klara Morova. That was a facade. Now, Barbora went to university to study music, and she was actually very talented at it. There, she met Katerina Morova in 1996. Former classmates explained that the two women spent hours together because Katerina was helping her. And there was even a rumor of a possible romantic relationship. However, this was never confirmed. I looked into it. It was never confirmed. Barbora had introduced Katerina to a secret organization led by her father, Yosef Skrla. The cult was an offshoot of an organization known as the Grail Movement. And it is important to note that the main members of the original Grail Movement have publicly stated Barbora and her father's sect offshoot branch have no part in their religion. Barbora's father, Yosef, led the offshoot cult, which he named the Ants. No association with Rock Therio and the Ant Hill Kids. But the Grail Movement Ants were, and I'm not even fucking kidding, they started out as a Boy Scout troop that Yosef turned into a religious cult. And his members believed that they could get into heaven by helping those in need, and by doing so, they're absolved of any crimes they commit in the process. Big cult 101 right there. One thing we know about destructive cults by now is it's usually led by a sadistic narcissist, and it never ends well. Barbora had met Katerina in 1996, 7 years before she met Klara. So Katerina helped Barbora by living with her and assisting her with tasks that she needed help with. And then when Barbora began therapy and started doing prescribed drugs to help her with clarifying her perceptions of reality, Katerina claimed that Barbora did not comprehend the effects and mistook the side effects for being drugged intentionally, kind of like a minor form of hypochondria. Now in 2003, Katerina had introduced her sister Klara to Barbora Sklarova. And Katerina tells her sister, "Look, I've adopted this child. She's been really abused. She's sensitive. Her name is Annika, and she is on the run from a horrific human trafficking organization, and we need to protect her at all costs, Klara. At all costs, we have to take care of her." I'm sorry, I really fucking went to town on that one. Now, Katerina lied to Klara by telling her that Annika was very ill with cancer and this huge plethora, laundry list of illnesses, and that she would not survive past 16 years old. Now, this is the insane part. As I said earlier, the adoption process in the Czech Republic is very complicated. For Klara to actually be able to legally adopt Annika, Annika had to physically appear in court, and the Grail Movement have this very, "We'll help you because you're part of our religion." So they pretty much give one of the members' daughters to Klara and Katerina, so they had a child to appear as Annika in court. It was successful, and Klara adopted Barbora, who was acting as a mentally disabled Annika. Then the abuse story of Andre and Jakob followed. And I hope everyone is still on the same page with me, because this is truly fucked up. You ever see The Sandlot, the movie The Sandlot, where they're about to go on that big spinny ride and the song Tequila is playing, and they take the big gobs of, like, Big Chief, that chewing tobacco, and then they start going around in circles on this ride, and then they all start puking? That's how I felt when I was reading what the mother and aunt did with these three other people to these poor babies. So Annika, aka Barbora, she was aided in her escape from Child Protection Services after the arrest of Klara and Katerina, in which she went to Norway and became Adam. And this was to hide until the search for Annika died down and Klara and Katerina were charged. Martin Farner and his wife Helena, they had known Barbora for years prior to meeting her in late 2007. and Barbora and the men who had helped her escape from custody childcare back in Curum, they went to Martin and said, Barbora needs a place to hide out until everything dies down. So Martin agreed and used his real son Adam's identity and passport to enroll Barbora into school in Oslo, Norway. So Barbora taped her breasts down and she shaved her head bald and became Adam Farner. Now fast forward a little bit to when Martin Farner got arrested for allegedly child trafficking and abuse in Norway, the charges were dropped because Barbora had lied about the abuse and she made up the drawing of the seven children to cause trouble. And she did it so well that she had the psychiatrists believing her, because who would think that a 13-year-old boy would make up that lie about his father to such detail that Barbora explained. Now Martin was cleared of every allegation. However, he lost his job and was never able to return back to normal life with his family. So upon being deported back to Czech Republic, Barbora, she was held in a crisis center cell to prevent another escape. And during her interrogation, her previous demeanor that she had of being all innocent and mentally challenged completely changed. Like, give this bitch an Oscar, okay? So Barbora stopped acting like a child and mentally disabled, and all of a sudden she became a 33-year-old woman who she was supposed to be, that was intelligent. She began telling investigators that she had been forced into acting like a child by the Grail movement led by her father, and that she was a victim herself. But she expressed that her father had no idea she was doing it. It's so complex and stupid. So Barbora detailed mental and sexual abuse that she had too been involved with without consent. And her body was covered in scars, bruises, and burns. So Barbora admitted to impersonating Annika and Adam, but insisted it was not voluntary. So Klara Morova, the adopted mother of Annika and the biological mother of Andre and Jakob, she preached that the entire time she had believed Annika was truly a 13-year-old person who needed real care. And once Barbora stated that she was the victim of abuse the entire time as Annika, well, Klara started singing like a canary. Klara admitted that Annika, aka Barbora, was involved in administering the abuse to her sons as well. And Klara said that while on the summer trip to the cabin with her sister Katerina and Hanna Barsova, Jan Turek and Jan Skirva, that Annika, along with herself, were holding down her sons while they were trying to drown them. Klara said that Annika had beaten Andre at times as well. And once back from the cabin, that Andre allegedly began threatening to kill anyone who came near him, and that's why they locked him underneath the staircase. And I'm gonna say it, if I spent a week in some remote cabin being mentally and physically and sexually abused by my aunt and stepsister and my mother and three some unknown dudes, oh, you're damn fucking right I'd be threatening to shank anyone who touched me. And then Klara thought it was a good idea to give her son the old Harry Potter treatment and lock him under the staircase, which I guess was a good thing because it kept him away from the constant physical abuse. And actually, it allowed the neighbor to save him through the baby monitor picking up the signal. Overall, terrible scenario, but I guess the closet saved his life. So now the officers have testimony to pursue Barbora Sklarova. And on February 11th, 2008, they charged her with child abuse and not seeking help from the police. This bitch starts going off at the mouth, guns blazing, and she is not going down without a fight. And she starts calling out Klara and Katerina. So Barbora starts claiming that Katerina and Klara had drugged her with psychotropics and other drug injections and forced her to become Annika and partake in the abuse. She claimed that they brainwashed her into acting like a mentally disabled child to deceive others away from the abuse of Clara's sons. So she was locked and beaten in the basement too, apparently, and she was sexually assaulted and groomed to become Annika to forget her true self as Barbora. with the end goal of selling her into human trafficking, which the lie detector test determined that was a lie. She made it up to save her ass. Because Clara testified that Barbora slowly integrated the manipulation that Jakob and Andre were trying to hurt her, and her secret doctor thought the only way to save her was to beat the boys. Now, Barbora said that her memory was hazy due to drugs, but recalled being raped by a man while being bent over a table, and then she detailed being passed around while in Norway just prior to becoming Adam. Now, physical examinations of Barbora's body revealed that her hymen was still intact in her vagina and she was still a virgin, and that the bruises, scars, and burns on her body were proved to be self-inflicted, and some even prior to just being interrogated. So now we're getting to the good stuff. Barbora then went for an intense psychiatric evaluation, revealing that she had an acute form of histrionic personality disorder. And this disorder is characterized by a distorted self-image and a need to be the center of attention by whatever means necessary. Her brother, Jan Skrla, was also diagnosed with histrionic personality disorder as well. Barbora was also able to dramatically change her demeanor to manipulate the opinions of those around her. For example, Clara. Clara believed that Annika was indeed a real child with a mental disorder, and psychiatrists evaluated for any signs of post-traumatic stress disorder, which Barbora claimed to have suffered, and they found none, nor did they find any physical or mental withdrawal from drugs. Barbora had mastered the psychopathic trait of manipulation and had pedophilic and sadomasochistic traits as diagnosed by clinical psychiatrists, meaning that Barbora got sexually aroused by the abuse and manipulation of children. Barbora was also diagnosed with dissociated personality disorders. Now, according to the testimonies, Barbora admitted to her manipulation as Annika and Adam and the self-inflicted injuries. Since Annika knowingly fled the authorities, they felt that she had no excuse for her crimes, even though she did try to fight, saying that she was taken by men from the Grail movement against her will. It's so complicated, you guys. There was so much to read in another language. The psychiatric analysis of Katerina Morova revealed pedophilic and sexual sadistic traits that caused her to act the way that she did. She instigated and led the abuse, and it was revealed that the text messages sent to Clara from the alleged doctor actually came from Katerina's cell phone. So to this day, it's believed that the secret doctor the entire time was actually Katerina Morova, but it hasn't been proven. Clara did testify that she met a man in a parking lot in the dark parkade, which is speculated to have been Barbora's biological father, Josef Skrla, the leader of the offshoot of the Grail movement. But it has not been proven, and he denies it. Prosecutors explained to the courts that the abuse was done with the intent to enslave Andre and Jakob for the religious purposes of the Grail movement and build a stronger cult. Barbora, she was used with the purpose of representing a messiah for the group to worship and cater to, which was represented by how much and how unhealthy the love idolization was for everyone towards her as Annika, aka Barbora. Are we good? If you're still confused, I tried. It was tough. Let's continue. The abusive behavior Clara exhibited towards her children, Jakob and Andre, was extremely out of the ordinary, claimed everyone who knew her. Clara's older sister, Gabrielle, recalled Clara to have been a, quote, excellent mother, and she wished that she could have been a great mother like her sister when she had her own children. When the courts cross-examined Clara, she was the only one to show remorse and shame for what she had done. Clara expressed that it was horrific what had happened, and that she truly believed what she was doing was for the greater good. Clara did not believe that her sister Katerina would be intentionally trying to bring an imposter into her home for a malevolent reason. She truly believed that the Grail movement was what was best for her son's behavior, disregarding the commands of abuse from the alleged doctor being sent by Katerina's cell phone. The courts did not believe the words of Clara, Katerina, and Barbora for claiming their innocence. And on October 24th, 2008, Katerina Morova was sentenced to 10 years in prison for manipulating and instigating the crimes. Clara Morova was sentenced to 9 years in prison. Hanna Basova and Barbora's brother, Jan Sklura, were sentenced to 7 years in prison for their part in the crimes. Jan Turek was sentenced to 5. And 33-year-old Barbora Sklurova was sentenced to 5 years in prison. Currently, in 2022, all charged have been paroled. Ingrid Eriksson, who was the principal at Barbora, aka Adam's school in Oslo, Norway, explained in interviews how the situation left her in distrust, saying, quote, "Looking back, we can say that we wondered about Adam's behavior, but this is not easy to know. Children at this age are very different and can be masculine or feminine." That was the bizarre true story of Barbora Sklurova. Certified fucking fruitcakes, these people. The concept of harming children to this degree is just monstrous. It's disgusting. Like, imagine you had no clue and you adopted a full-grown adult. Like, you would lose all trust in people forever with a splash of humiliation for the rest of eternity. And as I said at the beginning of the story, this isn't the first case of people exploiting their youthful appearance to manipulate people. For example, there is a case of the Ukraine adoptee, Natalia Grace, I think her name is. Fact check. Natalia Grace Barnett, yes. Which has seen more media than Barbora Sklurova. However, not nearly as interesting. But Natalia Grace, she was adopted and she had a form of dwarfism that makes her appear younger than she truly is. And then there's this huge controversy that she tried to kill a family, as the story goes on. And it's very convoluted, so I highly recommend that you check that one out. Thank you to Captain Cook's Food, Christopher, for doing the dramatization cameo in this episode. He's done multiple now, and he's fantastic to work with, and he's so enthusiastic. Thank you.
There'll be more, many more. They're coming for me now, and then they'll come for you.
Now we are back on the never-ending quest to find a truly scary movie. Of course, the recommendation is the 2009 psychological thriller Orphan. And there's a sequel that came out probably about 2 weeks ago now, titled Orphan First Kill. The premise is a family of four adopt a 9-year-old girl, who of course isn't. And she falls in love with the husband. It's so good. It's like a Lifetime Hallmark movie that just was rated a little bit harsher, so they had to bump it up a bit. It's so good. The girl who plays Esther, phenomenal. I tried to scare you, now you try to scare me. You can reach out and send me your horror movie recommendations at lullabythefearpodcast.com and follow on Instagram at lullabythefearpodcast, where I'm always posting usually horror movie memes and crap like that. Gotta bring some humor when you talk about some horrific stuff, right? And you can follow on Twitter at lullabythefear. So, thank you for listening to this week's lullaby. Sweet dreams. Lights out.